WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. If you prefer letters, two numbers, dial it in. Give us a call. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, a football game is going to break out in the middle of our political talk show.
Oh, of course.
We're going to have a football game breakout. We're going to see if the listeners like it.
Yeah. Go Democrats.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. We're going to have a football game breakout. We're going to have football played during the show. We'll be playing football. Kickoffs and tackling and all that sort of thing.
And taking knees, of course.
No taking knees. We're just going to talk about football all night because apparently those things go together now.
Oh, yeah.
Just like you always...
I definitely look to football players for all of my political leanings.
Just like you always knew they deserve to. Football and politics together at last.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to...
Finally. I've been waiting all my 31 years.
I mean,
just kidding. I'm 24. Shut up.
I can talk about all my fantasy picks and... my errors in deciding that the Dolphins were a good team to win this past weekend, which they were not. So we're going to talk about football.
And I know almost nothing about football, and I knew that that was a terrible choice, Derek.
That wasn't a terrible choice.
It wasn't a terrible choice. Well, I'm just saying because I happened to see the, what's that thing that ESPN does? Red Zone?
Yeah.
I happened to see their Red Zone, and it was very rarely about them.
Not good. if you're in a suicide league, you know that there are times when you want to pick a team like the Dolphins. And the Dolphins against the Jets seem like a pretty safe bet, given that the Jets have been terrible. Should have taken the Colts, is what I'm saying. Should have taken the Colts. But...
hindsight's 2020.
Live and learn. There's more money I'm never getting back, but that's how it goes. I waste so much money on football.
Hey, the season's young. You never know.
Well, the season's young for everybody who's still in the suicide league. I'm not because I picked the Dolphins.
Oh, I don't know what a suicide league
is. You pick a team every week, and if they lose, you're gone. Yeah, and you can only pick a team once during the season. Hence the desire to pick a team like the Dolphins.
Yes.
That might not perform well or be reliable at any other point during the year.
Except the beginning.
Except against the Jets, who somehow managed to win a game. Just another reason for me to hate the New York Jets.
And we all need more reasons to hate the New York Jets.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean...
Well, we've all got new and exciting reasons to hate football now, so we'll get into that later tonight.
Oh, we shall indeed.
In the meantime, I think other things are going on in the world.
Evidently.
Shay, get us caught up, would you?
Yes. So in local news, the husband of a Massachusetts elementary school teacher who was found dead in their Revere home last weekend was arraigned in connection with her death today. The Suffolk County District Attorney's Office said Andrew McCormick, 29, was arrested yesterday on a murder charge. Police said the body of McCormick's wife, Vanessa, was found Saturday in their home, beaten, stabbed, and strangled. Authorities said McCormick went to great lengths to get rid of the evidence before he called 911. 30-year-old Vanessa McCormick was a new mom, a sister, daughter, and second-grade teacher in the Lynn School District. Police had asked for help from the public, and it appears private and public surveillance footage helped them make the arrest.
This guy apparently liked the cocaine, is what I'm hearing
yes.
in the reporting. Allegedly liked the cocaine, and his alleged like for the cocaine may have been behind...
His alleged like for killing his wife?
His alleged murder of his wife in a domestic violence incident. We have to throw the allegedlies out there right now because
yes,
he's not...
because he's technically not been...
Has not been convicted, innocent yes. until proven guilty, but the cops moved pretty quick on this one, so I'm guessing there's some compelling evidence here.
Pretty damning evidence, yes.
Yeah, nothing good to take from this one.
Well, it did make me happy, though, that I happened to be watching the news with my mother when this story broke, which was yesterday when they made the official arrest. And my mom, for our listeners who listen often, I believe I've mentioned before, my mom works for a public school, so she... You know, it's just like if someone has the same shoes as you when they're found dead, it kind of hits close to home.
Yeah.
But my mother was very happy about this. So, Mo, if you're listening right now, they totally got him.
Yeah. Well.
Well.
They got him in jail.
They got him in jail. And from the reports, as Derek said, it sounds as though they have enough to keep him there.
Yeah. So we'll see how all of that plays out.
We will indeed. In national news, the mayor of Puerto Rico's capital city, San Juan, issued a plea for urgent help as she expressed frustration with the speed at which rescuers were being set to work on the hurricane-ravaged U.S. territory. Crews said many rescuers on the ground have been left without marching orders and said she was aware of instances where medics had waited for 2 days before being briefed. Cruz's comments come as the Trump administration pledged new aid in a presidential visit amid criticism of its response to the crisis. Hurricane Maria, which made landfall last Wednesday as a Category 4 hurricane, has been blamed for 18 deaths in Puerto Rico so far. I felt this was an important story to bring up.
This is a very important story because...
Only because no one's... That's unfair. Not no one's bringing it up, but it's being a bit swept under the rug.
It's... Well, it is and it isn't, because CNN is leading with it, but nobody watches CNN. And it's all over the web, and I keep hearing it pop up in the news, and everybody's, you know, where is FEMA? Where are the rescuers? Where is everybody? And they're pointing to what happened in Florida and Texas in the aftermath of Harvey and Irma. It's Harvey, right? Not Henry, it's Harvey.
Yes, I got Harvey. Right, oh my God, you finally got it right.
In the aftermath of Harvey and Irma. There's one very small difference here. And that is that those communities and those states are attached to the rest of the United States.
Very true.
Did not lose their ports, did not lose their airports. This is the issue. Puerto Rico is an island, okay? Until yesterday, there were no functioning ports and no functioning airfields. And when there are no functioning ports and no functioning airfields, there is no way to get relief supplies to the people who need them.
Very true. But with that being said, first of all, there are probably millions of Americans who don't even realize that Puerto Rico is part of the United States.
Outside of New York and the Northeast, I'm guessing you're correct about that.
Yes. And secondly, the Jones Act, which I believe was enacted maybe 30 years ago, prevents any non-U.S. ships from entering Puerto Rico. So that means that now that some ports are open, even though perhaps other people might like to help, they're legally stopped from doing so.
This is one of the aspects of the coverage that I have a problem with. The Jones Act is not the problem here.
Oh, it's not the problem. It's just...
The United States military has barges full of supplies waiting en route to the island, waiting to get to the island, okay? The Jones Act is not... There was nowhere for anyone to go.
You I understand that, but I'm saying now you can dock somewhere.
Right. And all the stuff is coming in. And everything's going to be fine. It's not like, this isn't a situation where there were a bunch of ships from Mexico and a bunch of ships from Brazil sitting off the coast saying, gosh, if only it wasn't for the Jones Act, we could get all of this water and fresh food and all these satellite phones to the people in Puerto Rico who need it.
But it's a matter of that, of course there weren't. Not because of the, I'm not saying that they weren't going because of the Jones Act. I'm saying they didn't care because of the Jones Act. Because it's like, why would we help this place we're not allowed to go to? And by the way, I've never been to Puerto Rico, but I have a friend from Puerto Rico. There is so much vacant land there where they could at least land a small plane, land a couple helicopters, get some kind of supplies there. I think there were 50 people who mobilized to try to help everyone. But again, they had no marching orders. They had absolutely nothing to point them in the direction of what was the best thing to do, which ironically, as we spoke on the show about last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, during Hurricane Irma, we lost several elderly people because they lost air conditioning in a nursing home. And that these 50 people or 50 some odd people, the first thing they did was attend to the elderly.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's unfortunate that they didn't actually have official orders, but I think it's kind of cool that they were like, okay, we're taking it upon ourselves. What do we do first?
They have been using helicopters to get personnel and some supplies, medicine, things like that, onto the island. But even that
is,
there's blown down trees on everything. You know, you think there's got to be some big spot of open land somewhere. Not really. You know, all the buildings are blown down. All the trees are blown down. The whole place is a mess. It is a disaster area.
But you can land on the top of a building, like the one that someone wrote help on the top of.
You can't, unless the building has a helipad, you can't land a helicopter on it. But they've been getting small amounts of stuff in. The problem is everybody on the island has need right now. And
The entire island lost power, which just blows my mind.
You need boatloads of stuff, and there was no way to get boatloads of stuff in before today. The stuff is arriving. The stuff is coming in. The U.S. military has been very busy. They're commandeering local construction equipment. They are clearing roads. They are finding out. They're assessing the situation. Could it have happened faster? Possibly. Who knows?
But I think you make a very good point, absolutely. But I think that what this ultimately points to is that, alluding back to what I said a few moments ago, where the majority of the country doesn't even realize that Puerto Rico is part of our country,
right,
is that this should have, Puerto Rico, like at least one hurricane happens pretty much every year now. Puerto Rico is right in the path of where they go. Puerto Rico's right there.
Decent number
this
of them, yeah.
Should have been planned. There should have been, if this happens, this is what we'll do.
Well, generally speaking, they've got plans in place, but this is a once in a thousand year hurricane that came through.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time,
devastated the island.
At the same time, I mean, we plan for so many worst case scenarios in this country. Why can't we plan for the worst case scenario for our little island buddy down there?
You can, but if there are no functioning ports and no functioning airfields,
plan on that.
There's
plenty you can do.
Even if you do plan on that, you still have to open the ports and clear the airfields before you can get significant amounts of relief supplies in. This isn't like the days of the Berlin airlift, where we're just going to parachute stuff onto the ground and hope for the best. We don't do that anymore.
I know, but I'm saying
that doesn't help anybody.
In this day and age, it's 2017. In this day and age, there should be a fallback if all the ports are closed, if there are trees falling over every place that you could land a plane or a helicopter.
It's an island. What are you going to do?
Exactly. We have scientists figuring out how to make robotic hands. We can't have them figure out how to get supplies to a place without a port set up for them.
No, because it's an island. And
it's an island. There's still land somewhere.
We're not. All the land has broken trees all over it, or pieces of people's roofs on it.
I reiterate, there has to be some
flooded
way that you can develop to still get things through.
Maybe we could have used hot air balloons or blimps. I don't know.
This is what I'm saying. Is you're speaking entirely in theoreticals, but there should be a not theoretical. There should be something that someone has come up with. Like I said, we have hurricanes every single year, some worse than others, but there has to be some kind of fail-safe.
Keep in mind, the other islands in the Caribbean that were affected by Irma are now barren. Because as soon as they reopened the ports, they put in airports, they put everybody on planes and boats, and they left.
And they left.
You can't do that in Puerto Rico because there's still 1.8 million people on the island, I think. You're not gonna boat lift all of them out of there. We gotta get the stuff to them.
We're gonna need a bigger boat.
I think there's a legitimate issue here as well in how thinly FEMA is stretched right now between Houston, Florida, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands. We're not hearing any complaints coming out of the Virgin Islands, interestingly enough. I got to imagine things are just as bad down there, but we're not hearing much. Probably because they did the same thing. They took everybody and just got them off the island.
I would say most of the people that I know that live on the U.S. Virgin Islands are, well, I can't say expats because they're still U.S. citizens
still,
and they're on U.S.
States.
Territory. But it's mostly people like the five people I know that live there all work for State Street still and do it remotely.
Yeah.
And have family in Boston.
Yeah.
So, little bit, you see a hurricane coming, it's like, oh, I'll stay with mom and dad for a month.
but there's a narrative that's being pushed in this Puerto Rico coverage of Donald Trump doesn't care about Puerto Rico because they're brown people. And that is not true, and that is not helpful.
I am almost never on board with saying people are wrong about Donald Trump, but in that case, I think you're correct.
And it's,
I think this has little to nothing to do with Donald Trump or his administration. I think it's largely, like I said, I Puerto Rico's often an oversight.
There is a huge level of logistical failure here. There's no question about that, that there should have been probably people pre-positioned to clear up the airports and clear up at least one deep water port so that as soon as the hurricane is gone, you can start bringing supplies in.
You can just do everything immediately.
Yeah. Instead of what happened, which is they're airlifting FEMA people in and military in from the mainland and having them clean up the airport and reopen a deep water port. And it's taken them a week to do it because they don't have any supplies. You could have pre-positioned all that stuff.
That's the point I was trying to make.
Nobody at FEMA apparently thought that far ahead. But nobody at FEMA is probably sitting there thinking, we're going to have this level of devastation on the island. Now keep in mind, there are a tremendous number of Puerto Ricans in the U.S. military.
Oh, absolutely.
A tremendous number. They're one of the major constituencies in the U.S. military. So the military is very, very much involved and very committed to making sure that Puerto Rico is taken care of. Nobody's sitting around here saying, oh, Puerto Rico, screw you. We don't care about you. There are logistical problems here. And in the same way that Katrina exposed a massive lack of federal readiness back in 2005, that has since been addressed. We saw how quickly they were able to move into Houston and how quickly they were able to move into Florida and provide support for people. Here's another situation where we have a massive lack of preparedness. And we don't expect that. We sit around and we think, oh, the government's got a plan for everything. Well, this one, no, it looks like you didn't.
Well, that's the point I was trying to make before, is that obviously you can't get supplies. There's nowhere to drop off supplies. There's nowhere to drop off supplies. Yeah. But nonetheless, especially as I said, in this day and age, you have to get a hope for the best, plan for the worst kind of, or plan for the worst, hope for the best. I forget how that saying goes, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And whereas you have to be prepared for the absolute worst to happen and know what you're going to do when it does.
Yeah.
And this was a clear example of that not being the case.
And what we don't need from the media is everybody sitting around saying, where's Trump? Where's Trump? Trump's screwing this up. Trump's screwing this up. And asking the real question, which is,
what can we do?
Why didn't we have a plan in place to reopen that airport 24 hours, within 24 hours of that storm being gone? Why didn't that plan exist? Because that's the lifeline. If you had an airport open, you can start flying military transport planes in with all the water, food, medicine, and generators you need. Mm-hmm. Helicopters, you can't do it because helicopters aren't built to move large amounts of cargo.
Fair.
They're built to move small amounts of people.
Well, that's, as I said, this is one of the few times that I think that it's incredibly unfair to blame, I hate calling him this, President Trump.
Yeah.
As much as I am the first person to say terrible things about our president, but...
Which he deserves in a lot of cases.
Yes, absolutely. But in this case, this isn't on him or his administration, or this is... It's like when people would blame Obama for the economy crashing. It's like, no, that actually took place before he took office.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to step back on that
one. Yeah, he actually had very little to do with that.
Yes, which is... That's why I think this is a good analogy, because Trump has very little to do with this being handled improperly.
Yeah.
He made all the speeches. He did all the stuff. He did everything he's supposed to do. He's going to plan a visit when it's safe to do it. Whatever. But at the end of the day, this is government agencies that should have been set up for the past decade to handle this. And Trump's been our president for, what, almost 10 months? It's not on him.
If you're the president of the United States,
and that's one of the only times you'll ever hear me say that.
If you're the president of the United States and it's on your watch, you're going to catch the heat for it.
Of course,
that's the way it goes.
But it's
and we all accept that. But all the coverage I'm seeing is Trump screwed up, Trump screwed up, Trump screwed up. No one, not one media outlet is talking about FEMA screwed up, and FEMA are the ones that screwed this up. And FEMA is much older than Donald Trump. FEMA is well-funded. FEMA is well-staffed. FEMA has all the ammunition and all the body bags and all the
accoutrement,
civilian relocation camp equipment set up, as we know, as we've been hearing for years and years and years. FEMA's going to take over the world. The conspiracy theorists love that one. They somehow didn't figure out the logistics of getting aid to an island after a hurricane. That's a bad look.
Yeah.
That's a very bad look. And the blame in this should be going to FEMA. Not anonymous United States government, FEMA. They are the ones responsible for this.
And beyond that, instead of placing blame, why don't we figure out what we can do to help?
Yeah.
I have read article upon article upon article about this because it is, for lack of a better term, can I say pissing me off on the radio?
Yes, you
can. It's pissing me off. But every single article I read had no information about how you can contribute money, had no information about how you could volunteer, had no information about how you can donate goods, had no information about anything. All it was, here's how much they're struggling. Isn't Trump a jerk?
Yeah.
And as much as I love hearing people call Trump a jerk, this is not one of those times.
No.
This is, we're living in a reactionary, knee-jerk, I want to be mad about something culture when we should be living in a, this terrible thing happened, what can we do about it?
Yeah.
Culture.
Yeah.
And who can we actually hold responsible?
This is the United States. When we're upset about something, our first question is, where do I send money? This upsets me. Where do I send money? And nobody's telling us that. Yeah. Where is J.J. Watt while this is going on?
Telling you.
Where is J.J. Watt? If we're going to blame anybody, we should, besides FEMA, we should be blaming J.J. Watt. He should be out raising money on Instagram and personally swimming over to Puerto Rico.
J.J.
Because he could do that.
Where you at, son?
He's J.J. Watt. J.J., where are you? Puerto Rico.
He's crying about Sunday.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, my God. Someday I'm going to learn how all this equipment operates. In world news, defying Iraq, Turkey, and its United States allies, Kurds in Iraq voted for independence on Sunday, with early reports saying that 90% of voters supported the measure, which does not trigger an immediate declaration of independence, but does direct the government to draft one. Kurds have controlled an autonomous region in the northeast of Iraq since the end of the 2003 Iraq War and have sought to create an independent state since then. Iraq responded to the vote by demanding that the region hand over its two international airports, and Turkey, which borders the region to the north, has threatened military action. So, in the middle of everything else, the Kurds have declared independence, and that is not, no one is going to recognize that.
No, they are not.
Because that is not going to make anybody happy other than the Kurds. And listen, I'm Team Kurd, okay? They've been getting a raw deal from all sides and really probably ought to have their own country. And given what's been going on generally in Iraq, probably ought to get that piece of Iraq. Just because it's... this is another example where the United States goes on a little bit of international adventure, trying to achieve whatever strategic goals we're trying to achieve, and leaves a place worse than it found it. The decision to give the Kurds control of that region was a direct result of the oppression that they suffered at the hands of Saddam Hussein. And these are the people who were gassed in the late 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who was alive at that time remembers seeing the footage of it. Thousands of people dead, Saddam dropping chemical weapons on them. There is a tremendous amount of sympathy for the Kurds in the Western world. In the Middle East, everybody wants them dead.
I was saying, in the Middle East, nobody cares.
The Turks want them dead. The Iraqis want them dead. The Iranians want them dead. I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out the Yazidis want them dead. And the Yazidis are pretty much getting along with everybody. Nobody likes the Kurds. And the Kurds have been a particular thorn in the side of President Erdogan in Turkey because they control a little section of Turkey, which is the northern part of Turkey, where they're conducting terrorist attacks and rebel assaults and all this sort of thing. So the last thing that he wants, as he's still dealing with the fallout from last year's attempted coup, is a new Turkish state on his southern border.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to put up with this. And this is, again, another failure of U.S. diplomacy and U.S. foreign relations. We probably shouldn't have set this thing up in the first place.
Yes, that's what I was about to say.
We certainly should have taken some steps to dissuade them from holding this very provocative election. Look, people have a right to self-determination. the United States shouldn't be telling other people what to do. But given everything else that's going on in the Middle East right now, this is not the time for them to be taking this action.
Well, that's, I totally agree with you. Hey, that never happens. I totally agree with you in that I think the U.S. has a terrible habit of this, where we go in and try to instill our way of life on people whose way of life is completely different than our own. And not to say that, obviously, for some of the atrocities that have taken place in the Middle East, obviously it was not... it was noble for us to intervene, but at the same time, you can't go and be like, we're going to fix you, and then cause this giant uproar, and then suddenly be like, nah, never mind. You guys can figure it out. We gave you all the information.
You can't sit there as an occupier, which is what we were in Iraq, which is ultimately why we had to leave Iraq. You can't sit there as an occupier and take an oppressed minority population and say, that over there, that's yours. Because as soon as we leave, and sooner or later you're going to have to, the central government is going to go up there and take power away from those people.
That isn't.
Violently, if necessary. We still have the problem with ISIS, which is all over the place, in that, not necessarily in the Kurdish region, but in other parts of Iraq and Turkey.
Oh, yes.
And Syria. We don't need this right now. And I have to believe that somewhere, someone said, hey, a few billion dollars American in aid, and we'll postpone this for a couple of years. Because that's usually what it comes down to. You send us some money, we'll do this thing later. So either we didn't write the check, or we didn't talk to the right people, or so here's another dimension to the sprawling chaos in the Middle East. Fun.
The Middle East is always so much fun.
WMFO Medford. In sports news, former Boston Celtics head coach Rick Pitino has been effectively fired from his job as head coach of the Louisville Cardinals. The move comes in the wake of a federal investigation into recruiting practices for the men's basketball team, which led to 10 indictments, including an Adidas executive and 4 college assistant coaches, in a scheme where top high school stars were promised payments from Adidas of as much as $150,000 to their families if they attended specific schools. Although Pitino was not among those indicted, NCAA rules hold a head coach responsible for anything that happens on their watch. Coupled with a recent scandal that involved the use of prostitutes during player recruitment, Louisville could be facing the so-called NCAA death penalty for repeat offenders, suspension from all NCAA competition for a year or more.
Which basically means bye-bye career.
Well, it basically means bye-bye Louisville football program. And this is why Mr. Pitino, as well as the athletic director of Louisville, are now on paid administrative leave. Pitino's lawyer said he's effectively been fired. Mm-hmm. He's not coming back. This is the second major scandal involving Louisville since Pitino has been there. The whole thing, the thing with the sex, came up when a madam in the Louisville area wrote a book talking about how they'd bring the students in. They're bringing high school kids in for sex during the recruitment process.
Yeah.
And then the players had access to the brothel during the school year.
Well, that's just a normal 17-year-old's life, right?
So that's a scandal. But this other thing, you can't pay college athletes. They're not professional athletes. They are college students. You can't pay to recruit them.
In any form.
In any form. There are very strict rules about the sort of perks that you can give them as students. One of them, it is widely known, is passing grades so that you can maintain your eligibility by any means necessary.
Yes.
You know? So you got that aspect of things. What Adidas and a former sports agent and some coaches were doing was they were going to these players and they were saying, look, you sign up over here. Adidas is going to give your family $100,000. So we're not paying the player. We're paying the player's family. Well, the FBI looked at it and said, nope, same thing.
I would say that's pretty much the same thing.
Pretty much the same thing. Doesn't matter. This is illegal behavior, conspiracy, fraud, all of the above. So there have been a bunch of indictments handed down. Nobody is suggesting for a second that Rick Pitino was directly involved in this. He maintains that he had no knowledge of it. One of their freshman players for this season is believed to be someone who was discussed in the indictment and somebody who sat down with some of these guys, and they basically said, we'll give you a pile of money if you go over here. This is the sort of thing that drives people nuts about college sports, where it's supposed to be about pure athleticism mm-hmm. and student athletes and the love of the game, and not the millions and millions and millions of dollars that these schools rake in by participating in basketball and football and hockey.
God, it is. I mean, well, it's weird. Where I went to college, our football team was terrible, but our basketball team was pretty top notch, and they were like celebrities around school. And I remember even like their mattresses were different. I think I've discussed this with you before.
Well,
like,
they're tall.
Everyone had an extra long twin. Not everyone had a Tempur-Pedic extra long twin.
Nice.
But it is, I mean,
Molly was a roommate of someone on the girls' basketball team, and I don't think she had that. I don't remember her having the fancy mattress.
Probably not.
But the men's team, oh boy, they get everything.
Oh, yeah, but it's unfortunate, especially considering half of these guys are going to go on, maybe not half, but a good chunk of these guys are going to go on to play professionally. It's like, really? Full scholarships, not enough to get you there? Like, that's, you have to have under the table endorsements. And especially in this day and age, I can't believe that they think they're going to get away with something like that. Everyone is under a microscope. There's no...
That's the thing that I find astounding about this, is because everything in the NCAA is under a microscope and has been under a microscope for several years now, because word is getting out left and right about these different scandals that happen. And people are being indicted, and people are losing Heisman trophies, and people are having to pay back money that they were given in college. And there's been a lot of this. So for anybody to sit around and say, hey, I got a great way to beat the system, like, everybody else ought to walk out of the room. And there are at least 10 people involved in this scam who are sitting there saying, hey, that's a great idea. And it's, you talk about the scholarship. The scholarship is an expectation. That's just a baseline expectation.
Yeah.
You're going to pay for me to go to your school, because I am going to make your school millions of dollars.
Because I can throw a ball really far and straight.
And this is where these student athletes, I use that term loosely and semi-disparagingly, this is where these student athletes are coming from, is I'm going to come play for your school. Education is entirely secondary to the reason why I'm here. I am here to make money for your school. Your school is going to make millions of dollars by virtue of me being there. You are going to profit off of me. Like any other American who is working for somebody, I want a piece of the pie. There was the move to try and unionize among the college players that fell down a couple of years ago. College players have been asking for payment, which they probably are entitled to. I have said several times on this show, if you are creating licensed merchandise, if you're creating calendars, if you're selling sweatshirts, mm-hmm. if you're selling jerseys, if you're selling basketballs or anything,
they should get a piece of that pie.
Yeah, with the player's name and likeness on it. This is the only area in American life where you can take somebody's name and likeness and put it on a product and not pay them for it.
Well, and especially places like, I mean, big schools like Notre Dame and the University of Michigan and places like that, where it's like, literally, they have bodyguards. They have cameras following them around. They are the equivalent of a professional athlete. And they get their tuition paid and a free meal card. Like, that's the most that they get off of
it. And some of these kids,
other than, you know, getting laid all the time,
some of these kids are going to suffer career-ending injuries. Some of these kids are going to wash out after college.
And have
college.
Nothing to show for it.
They're never going to make it at the pro level. Mm-hmm. This is their one shot. And you have a university raking in money hand over fist off of them. And they're sitting there saying, I'm getting nothing out of it. That's not fair. They're right. It's not fair. Which is why schemes like this, well, we're not going to pay you. We're going to pay your family. And the kid's sitting there.
Wink, wink, nudge,
nudge. And the kid's sitting there saying, I'll take $100,000. I'll take $100,000 and some free shoes and free suits and,
well, and especially
whatever you want to throw my way.
We're not talking about full-fledged adults. We're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Like,
but these are 18, 19, 20-year-olds that have a very solid sense of what their services are worth.
That's true.
And what their value could be down the road.
But at the same
sometimes
time,
sometimes an inflated sense of that.
Even that's what I'm saying, is at the same time, they while they may know how talented they are and what they could be worth, they still have the brain of an early 20-something dum-dum.
This is true.
That's, I mean, think about how many professional players have done the stupidest things just because they were young and felt powerful. It's, that's the thing, is I can't blame the players in this situation, only because someone out there want to offer my family $100,000 that can be filtered down to me, go right ahead. And I am in my 30s.
Think of a 21-year-old you know, and then give them $4 million and ask yourself what's going
like
to happen.
Such a disaster.
Yeah, but that's pro sports. That's pro sports. That's if you're a top NBA, NHL, or if you're a top NBA baseball, or no, if you're a top NBA or NFL draft pick, you're getting $4 million. Here's $4 million, kid. Have fun. Yesterday you were a college student. You're like on your own for the first time in your life, and someone just gave you $4 million. It's not going to end well.
No, it's not.
Some kids,
as we've seen in many situations,
some kids are going to be able to handle it, but the ones that can't are really going to be unable to handle it. And that's where you see some of these athletes just like blowing up off the field and getting into all these misadventures. They don't
and
know.
And killing people at a nightclub by mistake.
They don't know. Well, that's a different situation entirely.
I'm sorry. That was in poor taste.
That gentleman had brain damage from playing too much football.
Oh, yeah. That's totally what's to blame.
That's part of it.
Well, in entertainment news, thousands of fans are petitioning Warner Brothers to make Wonder Woman bisexual in the sequel to the film studio's blockbuster summer hit. Don't sigh while I'm telling a story. Gianna Collier-Pitts, author of the Change.org petition, wrote, quote, all I ask is that Warner Brothers directly acknowledge Diana Prince for who she is, who she has always been, regardless of her current love interest, and what her character could potentially represent for millions of people. As of today, the petition had more than 5,700 supporters. Speculation has long swirled regarding the sexuality of Wonder Woman, who is known in reality as Diana Prince. Reality. That was a weird way to put it. And in 2016, the current writer of the Wonder Woman comic book series, Greg Rucka, confirmed that she was in fact quote unquote queer. Just by the sigh when I introduced the story, I know you have a strong opinion about this.
Do we need this? How is this helpful? I don't care. I don't care. And look, Warner Bros. Is going to do what Warner Bros. Is going to do. By the way, Wonder Woman, not bad. Not a bad movie. Not the be-all, end-all that everybody's making it. Have you seen it?
No.
It's a decent, by-the-numbers superhero movie. Okay?
That's why I haven't seen it.
I'd put it in the same category as the first Captain America or the second Thor movie.
Haven't seen that.
There's nothing here that's unique or different or special. It's a very well-executed superhero movie.
That's why I haven't seen any of those. That there's nothing unique or special about it. Well, this is one of those moments. I do think this is just kind of, and the girl who started the petition is an NYU student who, while I hate to generalize the millennial agenda, I think she just, she's the head of the LGBTQ, association.
Sure.
At NYU. And it's a big, like, hey, here's a thing that I can make a stance on. It's
also, here's a way that I can get some publicity.
And I was going to say, here's a thing I can make a stance on that I can get publicity off of. And I'm a firm believer in the fact that I never judge the actions of people that I have not walked in their shoes. I am straight. I have no idea what it's like to be bisexual or gay or fill in the blank. In that sense, I don't feel I'm really qualified to judge one way or the other, because Wonder Woman's hot as hell. I can say that.
I love Gal Gadot.
But if, and there, I'm sure there are many people out there who, having the writer confirm that Wonder Woman was bisexual was like an important moment for them.
Sure.
Being like, this is a woman who's a character who's influenced my sexuality and womanhood. Blah, 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 blah.
I get it. That's awesome.
But at the same time, I do think this feels just like the tiniest bit exploitative and, as you said, publicity seeking.
James Cameron has an interview in the new issue of Vanity Fair, Variety, which is, I think it's one of those two. I believe.
Tomato, tomato.
Might even be the Hollywood Reporter. He's got a new interview in a magazine that came out today. I believe it is Variety. And he caught a lot of heat a few weeks ago when he said that the problem he had with Wonder Woman was that Wonder Woman was a sex object and not just a woman. And all the feminists came out of the woodwork with their torches and pitchforks.
It was a Hollywood Reporter.
It was a Hollywood Reporter, howling for his blood. Well, he doubles down on that in the interview that's out today. And he says, look, there is nothing special or unique here about Wonder Woman. And he talks about Terminator, and he talks about Sarah Connor. And he said, the fact that Sarah Connor is a woman isn't the point. Her sexuality is not the point. The way she looks is not the point. She doesn't have to be beautiful. She is a woman in a difficult situation who finds a way to win and survive. And audiences loved her for that, not because she was a former Miss Israel. And that is very much, that was the centerpiece of the marketing. Is here's Wonder Woman in her skimpy little outfit.
I was going to say,
kicking
Wonder
ass
Woman
and taking names, and it's great. But everybody's running around this summer as if there's never been a female lead that kicked ass before. Well, Sarah Connor in the first two Terminator movies. You remember Alien and Aliens and Alien 3 and Alien 4?
Evie and V for Vendetta.
Sigourney Weaver. You remember Halloween?
Oh, yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Remember Nightmare on Elm Street? Well, Nancy?
Oh, Nancy.
There are so many movies that came out.
She's the most annoying crier other than Claire Danes.
She's adorable in that movie, though.
Yeah, she is.
There are so many movies that came out in the early 1980s that had women kicking ass and...
in the opposite of a hot way.
In the opposite. Just being human and kicking ass and being smarter and more resourceful and more determined.
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis stabbed Michael Myers with knitting needles.
Yeah.
Talk about resourceful.
But that was it. They were smarter and more resourceful and more determined than anybody else around them, and they got things done.
Well, and beyond that, even taking this movie out of the picture, the Wonder Woman character in general, she wears a strapless leotard and go-go boots, carries a whip, and... If there's a better metaphor for like sexualizing out there, someone let me know. But her plane is see-through.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Here's Wonder Woman and her invisible. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Wonder Woman, when she was created in the era and in the image of the Betty Page pinup girl.
Oh, I believe that 100%.
She was a Betty Page, and this may have been what you had to do to get that comic published, because DC didn't want to do it in the first place. They didn't think it was ever going to work. But she is
let's make her hot.
She is basically Betty Page as a superhero. And
God, I didn't know that, and it makes perfect sense.
There's an entire rich history and narrative that goes with that character. And that is a very important character in superhero canon and in American culture. Not taking any of that away from it. But don't think for a minute that she's not there to be a sex object too. And what you have in all of these and what you have in all these other movies that millennial feminists don't seem to know exist is just plain everyday women. There's nothing special about them. They're not superheroes. They're just smart.
And they're not wearing strapless leotards.
They're smart, they're determined, and they're leaders. Sarah Connor is a leader. Okay, Ripley is a leader. And when that script was written, all of the roles in that script were written genderless. in the original Alien. Mm-hmm. And they just found actors that they thought would be good for those roles.
Would suit them properly.
Ridley wanted a woman in that role. And James Cameron wanted a woman at the center of Terminator because he liked the idea of this unstoppable machine that looks like a man against a woman and the tension that that presented and the danger that that presented.
Mm.
And seeing the woman rise up and win against those circumstances was much more meaningful to the audience than having John Cena or, you know, some other recognizable male superstar.
Vin Diesel or...
save the day again.
Yeah.
But now Wonder Woman comes out and suddenly we're supposed to be like, finally, a woman gets to be the hero.
A real feminist.
Apparently nobody saw Mad Max last summer. Because what is Furiosa if not a woman? This has been going on all the time.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, my favorite movie and graphic novel is V for Vendetta. Evie. Evie is the, as much as V is also the hero, Evie's the ultimate hero of that story.
Although
Alan, and it had to be a woman.
Alan Moore is a complete chauvinist, and we have to acknowledge the fact that Alan Moore is a complete chauvinist.
Which is what makes that even better.
And Evie is probably a lot more passive than some of the other female heroes that I've brought up. It's like, if you want to be a feminist and get all worked up about a great female character who kicks ass, go watch the Terminator movies. Go watch the first couple of Alien movies. And see everyday women who are just kicking butt over the men. And they weren't raised from birth to be warriors. They weren't a special gift from the gods given to Themyscira.
They just stepped up when stepping up was needed.
They aren't standing up for truth and light and love. They're just trying to freaking live. And they're doing a damn good job of it. I just, that whole thing.
That's why I knew that would rile you up, which is why I chose it.
And it's and look, if you like it and you appreciate it and it's meaningful to you, that's awesome. If you're caught up in Wonder Woman, that's awesome. It's not a bad movie. It's a pretty good movie. It's the best DC superhero movie that's come out so far. But it's not this be-all, end-all that everybody makes it out to be. There is history that leads into that movie. And if you don't know the cinematic history that leads into that, you can't really talk about it and tell me it's the greatest thing ever made. I'm sorry. This is me as a film nut getting riled up. In technology news, French researchers have made important but limited progress in stimulating the brain of a patient in a vegetative state. In a paper published in Current Biology, researchers describe how they use direct stimulation of the vagus nerve, the longest nerve connecting the brain to the body, to achieve a small level of consciousness in a patient who suffered a traumatic brain injury 15 years ago. As a result of the procedure, the patient showed an emotional response to music, was able to respond to some basic commands, and opened his eyes when researchers moved close to him. The researchers were quick to point out that no further improvement may occur, and that the patient has a very minimal level of consciousness. But the early results show that there may be some promise for electrical stimulation to treat severe brain injury.
Snap.
This story was everywhere over the course of the last week, and everybody was comparing it to the movie Awakenings. Everybody was saying they used electricity and they brought this guy back. No, they did not bring this guy back. They took a guy who was alive and had no conscious reaction whatsoever to anything and gave him a very, very small level of conscious reaction and awareness of the world around him. They're going to continue to try to make him better. This is a big breakthrough. This is an important story.
But he didn't suddenly snap back.
This isn't like we give them a couple of zaps and they're back to normal. No, there is still a lot here that is not understood. But the fact that they were able to achieve this is a big step forward.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just not, people hear the story and they're like, oh, they can fix brain injury now. No. We are nowhere near that. There is a scale when you're in a coma from 0 to 23. 23 being as recovered as you're near full recovery.
Yeah.
Because the brain damage always lingers. You're never 100% after you suffer one of those head injuries.
Yeah.
0 being, the autonomous nervous system still works. This guy went from a 5 to a 10. And that's still less than...
I would say, which isn't nothing, but it's not the something that some may be making it out to be.
That is bigger than pretty much anybody else has been able to do. And that's a big deal, and that's a big breakthrough. But the important thing is for people to understand that this isn't like, oh, we zapped the guy and he's up and walking around again.
Which I'm sure is what a lot of people are taking away from that.
That's, in a certain way, the way that it was painted in the media. And it's giving people the wrong idea. And when you hear stuff like this, you really got to dig in and see what's going on. Because our media is lazy and obsessed with getting on to the next clickbait headline.
Oh, of course.
So they don't really research or understand things the way that they did 20 years ago when people my age used to consume media. And they were thorough about things. So you see the headline, you're like, hey, great, we cured brain injury. It's like, no, we did not cure brain injury. We got a long way to go on
back
that.
Back up.
Long way to go.
It is, I mean, like you said, though, it's a, you got to crawl before you can walk.
Yeah.
It's, and of course, as we've discussed many times on this show, the news likes to provide clickbait and say, hey, they figured out how to get someone out of a coma. Well, no, they didn't. But this is still, I mean, it's still exciting, despite the fact that it's not maybe as exciting as a lot of people think it is.
Yeah. It's exciting, but it's exciting to the scientists. And the news media is sitting around saying, hey, yeah, we fixed this. No, not where we're at just yet. I have to say this is WMFO Medford, because the FCC likes that.
They do indeed.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
The swamp weather is leaving.
Thank goodness.
If you are like me,
Florida in July today.
If you are like me, you will be happy to hear that the swamp weather is leaving. This is it. Tonight's the last night of this nonsense we really got to put up with. Humidity level is going to be 91% tonight, kids. Look out for fog and damp sheets. Even if you solve that bedwetting problem, look out for fog and damp sheets. Lows in the upper 60s. Chance of a shower around tonight as well. Tomorrow,
please shower. We need to break this humidity.
Tomorrow might get some rain in the morning, scattered showers here and there during the day, and then the cold front starts moving in. Highs in the mid-70s tomorrow, lows around 50 degrees tomorrow night, and you will feel a significant drop in the humidity tomorrow. Friday, sunny skies, high in the mid-60s, lows around 50 once again. Saturday, look for some showers here and there. Not going to be a total washout, but there's going to be rain about, depending on where you are. High in the mid-50s, low in the 40s Saturday night, so you'll want to pull out the blankets. Sunday, sunny skies, perfect weather if you're heading out to Gillette Stadium. High in the mid-60s, low around 50 Sunday night. And then on Monday, another sunny day, highs in the mid-60s, lows in the mid-50s, little extra humidity as the hurricane blows by.
I was going to say, can't we knock this but off already?
We should be. It's not going to be like it's been this past week. Yeah. Gillette on Sunday was brutal.
I'm going to say, I felt terrible watching the game on TV.
Brutal.
Seeing the players, they just
were,
glistening. They were just glistening.
It wasn't just the players. It was everybody up in the stands, too. Because where we sit, we are deliberately in the sunny section of the stadium.
Oh, fun.
Because when
it matters. Yeah,
in December,
it's a great place to be.
When it's 20 degrees out and the sun hits you, it's awesome. And you're happy to be up there. And there's only a couple of spots in the stadium that keep sun late in the afternoon. We're in one of them. When it's 90 and humid, it ain't where you want to be. So at halftime, we did something that we never do. We left the seats. And I spent the second half of the game, they put a new bar space in up on the third level concourse. So I spent the second half up there watching the game. Great view, beer right in back of me, televisions all over the place. Not a bad place to watch a game. Nice new feature that they have at the stadium. I don't know where the other clowns went, but that's where I was.
It's a good place to post up.
Yeah, and then actually at the very end of the game, I found my way down to the 100 level because it didn't look like they were going to win, and then I saw Brady throw that beautiful, beautiful game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, that was pretty.
Yeah, love those guys. We're going to be talking about the NFL later because
we are indeed.
They're not everybody's favorite people right now. I'm not calling for a boycott, I'll tell you that. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is WMFO Medford. Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight on The Town with Mikey D. Everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Former Mikey D DJ, Angel Wood, is now over on ZLX. And it was pretty funny.
Oh, cool.
As we're driving back from the game, my friend Brett and I the other night, Angel came on, and Brett was like, oh my God, I love her. I love her voice. She sounds so beautiful. And I'm like, I know Angel. Yeah, she pretty much is. And he was like, you know Angel. And I had to go into the whole thing about how she used to host on The Town with Mikey D. Mm. So when we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention this week here on WMFO Medford?
Ready for a change of pace in your diet? Well, think lamb. If you buy a whole leg of lamb, you can have part of it cut into sirloin, chops, and steaks, and you can serve the remainder as a roast. Be sure to look for the U.S. Department of Agriculture grade shield with the letters USDA and the word prime or choice. It's your sign of quality. For more information on lamb, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting, as in Smokey Bear.
Uh-huh.
I was about to start up my ATV on a trail near a bunch of dry brush, and Smokey told me that was dangerous because one spark can start a wildfire.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
No kidding.
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
Kidding. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture.